Hey, this is Rob Liefeld, and you're listening to Matt, Ian, and Paul on the McSauce Podcast.
Welcome to episode 335 of the McSauce Podcast. My name is Paul McGinty. With me, as always, are Ian Sharpley.
Hello!
And Matt Cassell.
Hello.
It is Monday night, August 17th, and we are here to right some wrongs, correct some business, get things back on the right track, specifically with DC Comics. We're going to talk tonight about, in light of the recent DC mass layoff,
bloodbath,
yeah, slaughtering.
It was like a horror movie over there. They released a lot of editors and a lot of, not necessarily writers and artists, but a lot of people behind the scenes responsible for getting the writers and artists into comic shops. But DC's in a little bit of disarray right now. So we're going to grab the reins and determine how we're going to fix DC Comics. But before we fix DC Comics, we do housekeeping with Ian Sharpley.
We're going to fix McSauce. That's what we're going to do.
We haven't been able to do that in 300 plus episodes. We're still trying. Still trying. A lot of resiliency in this brand.
So if you have any ideas about how to fix McSauce, go to McSauce.com. Hit us up on our social medias. We have Twitter. We have YouTube. We have Instagram. Hit us up anywhere that you like. And honestly, if you really, really, really want to fix McSauce, then you can go to our Patreon where you can put down five of your hard-earned dollars.
Or 10 if you'd like.
Or 10. If you put down 10, you'll get 2 months. That's how math works and months work. So if you put down $5 for our Patreon, you will get to choose an exclusive episode. So we'll send you over a menu that you can order an episode from. You can pick the topic. You can pick who's on the episode. You can pick how drunk we get while we're doing the episode, so you can essentially have the power, just like we do tonight, to fix DC. You fix McSauce.
It's like a choose your own McSauce adventure.
It is. You guys remember those back in the day?
And who wouldn't want to do that?
You could flip to Paul, Ian, and Matt come to a strange house. This house has a lot of disembodied Christmas ornaments and a sign that says something about go fuck your mother. Do you proceed or do you run off in terror?
Can you please give some context to that insanity?
So, as a holiday tradition for many years now, we have gone to what we lovingly refer to as the Murder House in the North Hills of Pittsburgh. It's a house that, Matt, how would you describe it?
It's a house of horrors. It is basically as if the reverse Scrooge lives there. Somebody that used to love Christmas and now hates it. And he has taken all of his lovely Christmas decorations and turned them into freak show displays that he does for the sole purpose of annoying his neighbors and amusing McSauce.
And they're up year-round. So we like to go during Halloween, the spookiest time.
It is very fitting.
Scare the shit out of us.
It's the most spookiest time.
We drove around it a few times, and it is admittedly way spookier than you would think it is. If you want to see us scream like little girls, check out our YouTube page for those fun episodes.
McSauce Nation, I don't think you really understand how cool the Choose Your Own episode is. Like, if I got to choose my own, like, last podcast on the left, like, I'd, like,
what would you pick?
I don't even know. What an honor. Like, well, if you like what we do here and, like, you get carte blanche, like, we don't edit things out.
We do all of these, as you can tell, we do these in one shot. So if we say something really stupid,
well, but
if
also
leave it
like
in.
We don't pick and choose topics. Like if you
We're
want
not
a topic,
that creative.
we do that topic. Like this is your episode. It's
and
not
we'll
like
give it
it's
our
not
best
like someone's
shot,
like
too.
Do My Little Pony and we're like we're not doing that. Pick something else. Like whatever you want, we do it.
Pretty much so far, everybody has been providing us with a topic that we have at least had some kind of relationship with or we could get excited about. Mm-hmm. Nobody's actually gone out of their way to torture us yet. So be the first, Mixos Nation. Go out there, pick a topic that you know we will not like talking about. I dare you.
Well, for those that are afraid to commit that $5 to getting your very own episode, check out the last episode that we did. It was episode 334 of the regular Mixos podcast. And check it out because it was Ian's Patreon episode. So that gives you a taste of whatever you want. Ian had this crazy idea of like a better or worse using the Dealey Wheelie Cheely Wheel and overrated, underrated.
And
it was a lot of fun. It was totally unique. So that could be you.
Yeah, we do a lot of things on this podcast. We have a lot of different props or different sort of recurring themes that we use. Don't be afraid to use any of the stuff that you've heard us do in the past and maybe remix it a little bit or change it a little bit.
Oh, my God. What if somebody tells us to go back to the murder house?
We'll strap on our...
what if they tell us to knock on the door?
Well, I mean, that's not part of...
I hope that they would not do that.
That's not part of... That's not how this works.
But we've done in the past, we do movie reviews, of course. We do riff track kind of things where we'll put Flash Gordon on. You can request something like that where we'll do commentary over... a show, a TV show, if you want. We've done stuff like that in the past. So think outside of the box, give us your best shot, and we'll give you a pretty entertaining episode. I can guarantee it'll at least be stupid.
100%. So speaking of stupid, why don't we start talking about how we would fix DC Comics? They're in a bit of... bit of hand changing right now. Jim Lee is sort of the only, I think he's the chief creative officer. I don't even know what that does. We were talking before we recorded.
Is he the editor?
I don't
the
know. Chief
I think he's
officer.
The publisher. He's the publisher.
No, he's no longer the publisher.
Oh, I
he
beg
was
your pardon.
Formerly.
It doesn't matter. Since he's been one of the big wigs at DC, I don't know what he really does. We were saying earlier when him and Dan DiDio were co-publishers, like Dan DiDio was very vocal. He did a lot of interviews, like he would let you know what he wanted, what his ideas were, how he wanted to see things proceed. Like you had a very good sense of who Dan DiDio was and what he wanted to do with the company. Like Jim Lee to me always felt like they're like, well, he's really popular, so let's keep him up as like our face of the company so that because he's popular. But like I don't know what he does. Like I've never once heard Jim Lee be like, I think we really need to push like the spooky side of DC Comics and really do like lean into the Justice League Dark line of books. Like Jim Lee is so white bread. He's so just bland. He's like Sidney Crosby talking. He's just like, oh, you know, guys, we released
we
really
draw
good books
the superheroes
this month,
and put the capes,
you know,
on
we've
them.
Got some good books this month, we're gonna dump it in.
Does Jim Lee always start answering questions by saying
yeah, I like Jim Lee. I've seen him in a couple interviews where he's been a little looser, but he did Fat Man on Batman and he's just so like toeing the company line, and I think that's why he's still at the top, because he's a big comic book name. He had his name and talent has a lot of cachet to it, and he's just company man.
Well, as we all know,
Jim Lee's not going to make any waves.
That is the reason why him departing Marvel was seen as such a big shockwave, because he is the quintessential company man. And if he was unhappy and would leave the company culture of Marvel and go off and become a renegade with the Image guys and do his own thing, then something really was going wrong. So yeah, Jim Lee is the quintessential company man.
Yeah, it should have been less of a shock that he went back to a company like DC from Image than it was for him to leave Marvel and go to Image. He's always seemed like, out of all those Image pioneers, as kind of the one that's not much of a risk taker, and is always kind of thinking about that long-term security, which is why he's sold Wildstorm to DC, which is probably why he's not making hay at DC now.
I think he's making plenty of hay.
Well, I'm sorry, right now. Like making waves.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I think that of all the guys, if you look at them, they would all have different aspirations. Mark Silvestri wanted to get his foot more into TV and movies, and Todd McFarlane wanted to honestly have a multi-layered empire. Jim Lee, I believe he even has said this, that he wanted to, his dream was to run either Marvel or DC someday. Yeah. So,
well, congratulations, pal. Now yeah, you're doing it.
Yeah, I mean, so he took all the steps to do that and accomplished his goal. That's what he wanted to do. And when you want to do that, you are a corporate person at that point. So, you know, kudos to him. But I think it's been long enough that he's been the chief creative officer, or which is what he still remains, is the chief creative officer of DC.
And it hasn't just been him. For a long time, it was him and Dan DiDio. For a long time, it was him, Dan DiDio, and Geoff Johns. Like, there have been a handful of people at the helm, and I forget who was before DiDio, but Jim Lee's been at the top of the DC mountain for a long time now, and he's had some other people with him, but he remains. But I don't really know what Jim Lee does, what he's responsible for. Like,
DC as a whole to me right now feels very rudderless, very kind of meandering. It's kind of like a Roomba, just bouncing around.
There's no coherency. Matt, your buddy Jim Titus, earlier tonight, you were texting with him, and he was like, oh, I don't think DC doesn't feel like an interconnected universe. And right, like, as soon as you said that, I was like, this guy has no idea what he's talking about. And then the more I thought about it, I was like, oh, no, he's right. It used to be, but lately it isn't, because DC's brand right now seems to be, hey, this writer's popular, well, let him do what he wants. And then the writer's like, oh, I'm going to kill the Flash. But then another really popular writer's like, oh, but I'm writing a story that's about the Flash. And DC's just like, oh, well, let them both do what they want. And it creates a really split universe where nothing does feel coherent.
Is that a real example that you're giving?
No, it's not a real example, but James or Tom King made some choices in his Heroes in Crisis run that did not line up with stuff Scott Snyder was doing, and whatever the fuck that fucking mind trip he did for like 5 years that I think is over, or now they're starting like part two of it. I don't fucking know. He did Metal, and that turned into Justice League. His Justice League run, which was all part of that, and now they're doing Black Metal, or they just finished Black Metal. So,
or is it Death Metal? Who even knows?
Or is it Death Metal? I think,
or is it Dark Metal?
I think it's Death
is
Metal.
Is it Power Metal?
Is it like Rose Metal?
It could be Euro Flower Metal.
Is that a thing?
Yeah, it's really.
Oh, when we're done.
Euro Flower Metal, that's a thing?
It's the derogatory way of referring to it. But yeah, I'll play
the outro will be Euro.
You want me
flower
to put? Okay,
metal.
We'll put some Euro flower
for
metal
for the people.
It's like real sing-songy, like kind of like.
Oh, I like that.
It's like almost like if the Smurfs became metal is probably what you would get.
I love that.
Yeah.
Wait for that, people.
And so, and there's a lot of disparate, paths, being walked at DC right now, just seemingly based on creators and what they want to do. Like, it doesn't seem like there's really one editor pulling it all together and making sure everything's lining up right
now.
Does
DC run in the same... I think I know the answer is yes, but DC runs in the same way where there are groups. So at Marvel, there is the X-Men group. Yeah, there's one X-Men editor and there's one Spider-Man.
Does Marvel still operate that way?
You know what? I don't know for sure. I don't read comics anymore.
I know that's how they used to do things, but for some reason, I feel like...
Recently fired Bob Harris from DC used to be the X-Men group editor.
Well, Ian, I think that's also a great point about how we would rebuild DC, because like I haven't been reading comics. Like I haven't, like the last couple times I went and got books, like I don't get DC books. I used to get like, you know, Superman and Batman.
What
I used
do
to get,
you get? I can't imagine.
Horror books. I get like a bunch of horror books. I get Nailbiter.
Image
I get Ball. I get Nailbiter. I get Ascender, an Image book. I'll get Saga whenever it comes back. I've been getting Gideon Falls, which is really good, really fucking weird.
That's Jeff Lemire, right?
Yeah, it's Jeff Lemire. I've been getting
Didn't you
Plunge,
get Black Hammer?
One of the Black
no?
I got the first trade of Black Hammer. I've been getting Plunge, which is the DC the
that
Joe Hill, one
to,
of the Hill House books.
Right.
Plunge is really fucking good.
I was disappointed in the artwork, because like
the artwork in Plunge.
Yeah,
it's Stuart Immonen.
I know it is, but like sometimes artists change their style for certain books, and I was, you know, expecting to get like Stuart Immonen of Amazing Spider-Man or Empress, and instead I get kind of this like sketchier version of it.
Do you think it has more to do with the subject matter?
Well, yeah. I mean, he's
like,
changing.
Like he not just how he's drawing it, but he draws Spider-Man a certain way. Then he's gonna draw a guy that
is
like,
on a
like
boat.
Is on a boat. Right?
That's what this book is about.
And Matt, being a guy that champions dynamism, like
big,
you know,
boat guys,
you get like Spider-Man swinging through New York,
right? Well,
and
then
you
take
get
that box up the fucking poop deck,
and then you get a guy standing on the prow of a ship.
This stinks.
Like one of them is definitely going to lend itself to
is
your
that a
style,
real part
which
of
is
ship,
dynamism.
The prow?
The prow, yeah.
Okay.
Matt, I'm looking at some of this artwork. I don't know that it's sketchier. Really?
Okay.
I don't have it
in front of me.
Well, this
so
isn't the Stuart Immonen episode.
Stuart Immonen.
Plunge, like the story.
No, but it is the Plunge episode.
Yeah. My point is, I'm getting a lot of weird stuff right now. I'm not getting traditional DC superhero books. Probably because they scared me off, because I wasn't liking anything that I was getting.
Well, they seem to let... And Marvel's guilty of this too, but they take their premier writers and they give those guys somewhat carte blanche to do what they want in their own little pockets that doesn't create a very unified like experience, even though it's kind of supposed to be. So right now, if you're not into Tom King, Scott Snyder, or Brian Michael Bendis at DC, then you're probably not going to like what they're doing.
Yeah. Like
I'll tell you this. I'm not really a fan of any of those guys right now. I have liked Scott Snyder and Bendis in the past, but not lately. And for Tom King, he's a different breed, because I think that he is operating as an author in a comic book universe, and comics aren't, you know, novels. And I feel like he's trying to write as if he is constantly trying to flex his prose muscles in front of us. I think the problem is that's the wrong audience. Now, I don't know what I'm talking about, because I think Tom King's books are some of the best selling of comic books, but I feel like he doesn't do anything exciting that really brings new fans into the fold. I don't think anybody's really doing that, obviously. So that's where we come in. What are we going to do?
We're going to make them all horror books, because that's all I'm interested in reading right now.
It's funny how we've each sort of we started our comic book journey with superheroes or superhero adjacent stuff, and then all kind of just slowly moved away from that. Maybe some of us slower than others, but yeah, yeah, I don't.
But I still love superheroes, man. Like, I just like them done a certain way.
I feel like I like the idea of superheroes.
I don't like the modern take on them in comics. I find it to be tedious, and there is a major element of dynamism that's lacking. I was watching
dynamism. Why can't I say dynamism?
Dynamism. Episode 2, McSauce episode two, comic book podcast back
yeah,
in those
back
days.
Back in the day whenever we were like, hey, we like comics.
We liked comics. That's why we dropped it, folks. Fucking hate them. So
how are we going to fix this thing that we despise?
I was watching an episode of Artist Kayfabe. Ian, you turned me on to
cartoon
that.
Cartoon Kayfabe?
Yeah. Cartoon Kayfabe, rather. Yeah. You turned me on to that podcast. And I was watching the episode where they talked about the Savage Dragon miniseries, and mm-hmm. they went through page by page. Do you guys, either of you guys watch that?
I have.
So worth it. It's like 2 hours and they go through the miniseries.
It's great. I'll turn on Cartoonist Kayfabe and just sit there and draw and listen to, it's like a walk down memory lane with two guys that were into comic books at the same time that I was really heavily involved into comic books as well.
So. Right. Those were like our formative years into mm-hmm. comics that really, I think, created our overall excitement and passion for the medium mm-hmm. that carried for decades, even beyond the point where we weren't really enjoying them anymore. But because we were so into it at this particular time, it fueled us for that long. But anyway, my point is these guys were kind of dissecting those three issues of Savage Dragon, breaking down kind of the way that the story is told and the dynamism of the artwork. And I'm looking at this and I'm like, this is so good. And I'm trying to think, like, what have I read that's like remotely like this? And I don't mean like the content exactly, but the way that the story unfolds, the structure of the three acts, the way that the characters are drawn to absolutely leap off of their backgrounds in an exciting way. And, you know, there are artists that are technically superior to Larson, who drew those Savage Dragons, but not really, not in terms of storytelling, not in terms of doing anything exciting. There's just a dullness to it. So, like, if I'm in charge of DC, I want to try to inject some of that excitement back into my comics. Maybe I lean more into some of the older guys, or find younger guys that want to bring that kind of energy to the page. Let the artist, like, what's happened, I think, in the last two decades is comics have slowly morphed away from being primarily a visual medium. Even though the artwork has become very beautiful and detailed, it's lost the energy, you know? And everything is drawn as a pinup. And nothing is drawn as this exciting drawing to help propel a story or tell a story or get you excited to check the next page. There's so little of that, like, kind of like methodical build up, boom, splash page or double splash page. It's like these very regimented, gridded layouts. And also,
but isn't Watchmen a regimented gridded layout, and it's arguably the greatest comic book of all time?
It is, but that's a little bit more of an outlier, and frankly, that's not what got me into comics. I'm talking about what got me into comics, and I'm telling you how I'm going to fix DC.
Right, and I wonder if if I would feel the same way if I got into comics in 92, but since I didn't, like, none of that matters to me. Like,
and, I mean, like,
I would rather the story be served.
Some of your first comics, like, Paul, no. Some of your first comics were still Jim Lee drawing Batman, and Batman, or Jim Lee's of that era. Jim Lee draws and tells stories visually like that. That's, unfortunately, not many people are doing that anymore, but you still were kind of like, your first taste of comics was that style.
Yeah. yeah, that's true. It was. But like, I don't think I've like clung to that.
But that's the thing. I think we, at least I think Ian, you're probably with me on this. I don't think I could exactly articulate that 10 years ago, but now that I've spent some time reflecting on it, I feel like almost through osmosis, there's like, we didn't know exactly what it was that we were kind of reacting to and loving, but that's it. And it's not there anymore. And we're not that into comics anymore. There's something to that.
I think there was a ton of excitement. This is going to kind of lead into the way that I would fix DC or some things that I would do. There's an excitement that goes into creating something that you own and you have control over. And I think that I would institute a little bit more of creative ownership to these properties, because I think we all know throughout the years that everybody sort of goes and they do their work at Marvel or DC, but they don't own those characters. And they've seen the way that characters that are owned by Marvel and DC have blown up and made all this money for those parent companies, but haven't made them a lot of money. So they save their best characters. They save their best ideas. They get recognition from working at the big two. And then they go take their big idea to another studio that will allow them, or another imprint that will allow them to own that character. I think a great way to interject some life and vibrancy and creators to bring their best number one ideas and characters to DC is to give them some ownership to those characters. Maybe it's an imprint off to the side of DC. Maybe it's their own little pocket universe or something like that. I know that DC has that Black Label. I'm not sure how much ownership the creators have, but I know that those Image, I've listened to the Image creators, the original guys, talk about how excited and the competition that there was with their characters that they personally owned. Well, so that's what I would do.
Black Label's all DC characters. It's, you know, Batman and John Constantine, so I can't imagine they have any ownership. But okay. The Hill House stuff, it's I mean, I don't know, but I would imagine since it is all not the standard definition of creator-owned, but it's all the creators bringing this to the table, then they would get more cuts if Lionsgate is like, we want to make Basketful of Heads.
I would give them the same deal that Image has, because I don't think that you can compete with that deal. I'd give them the same deal and let them run wild with whatever they're doing, and it would be more artist-driven. I love a writer, but I think you get some of the best energy whenever you give it to an artist and let them do. Because comic books, without the art, comic books is just fucking prose, man. It's just a novel or, you know, honestly, the skeleton of a novel without great, exciting artwork.
In this current day and age of comics, is there not, like, haven't they shifted the way they pay writers and artists back? Like, aren't there more credits and more payments being given out?
You still don't
things? Or are we still? Yeah, but you're not going to own.
I mean,
those characters.
Robert Kirkman owns The Walking Dead.
But that's a Image thing. It's a creator owned thing. Like, no one's gonna come in and draw or write Daredevil and own Daredevil.
No, like, but he's saying going forward, saying.
Now the publisher of DC, or the tri-publisher of DC. That's going to be something that I would want to do, to bring in the talent to do the work that I find exciting. Give them creative rights so that they can put their best ideas into my house.
Right. I think that would be pretty cool. Like a DC imprint, sort of like a Vertigo, but not really. It's just like DC creator, whatever.
So I mean, then like, we're not creative. We so you're writing, you're drawing a Superman comic. You inject a new character, call her Farley Quinn. She does great, and then they want to make a Farley Quinn movie.
No,
that's part of the Superman universe, but you can't use Superman in it because she belongs to someone else.
Again, that's why it's something that stands alone. That's why it would be an imprint. It would be a DC book, but it would be off to the side, much like Matt said, like a Vertigo that stood outside of DC.
But that doesn't help DC Comics. DC Comics is how do we...
But it does, because it's part of DC Comics, just like Vertigo is part of DC Comics, Paul.
It does, but like I was under the impression, like DC Comics is Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman. Like, how do we reinvigorate this brand, these characters? How do we make the DC stable? That's what I thought we were talking about. I'm a publisher.
I look at the entire width and breadth of my company. I don't hyper-focus on capes and tights, my man. And in fact, that is why they brought all three of us in. That's why they recently hired us, to look at different aspects of this company. So, Paul, you're the expert on Superman and Batman.
That shit
bores the hell out of me. So I'm over here in the creative zone with all the stuff I talked about. Like, you go for it. Let her rip. What are your ideas?
I don't read comic books anymore. But honestly,
can we vote on firing him?
I mean, you can fire me. Honestly, like I thought when we were talking about this, it was about like real DC Comics, not like some weird Vertigo thing or like Image number 2. Like, how do we make DC books good again?
Paul, I don't give a shit about those characters, but that's like your bag. So what would you do?
What did I just fucking say to you 10 minutes ago? All I've been reading are weird horror comics lately. They're not my bag either.
So then DC is sunk.
Well,
we have no idea.
I mean, with the things that I was talking about, I feel like that could inject some excitement back into it. I think another thing I would do is maybe I would certainly get rid of guys like Snyder and probably Bendis. And
I think giving writers carte blanche is currently a big problem. It's what chased me away from buying all those books, because they're all disparate stories. They're all doing what they want. They're doing weird shit. Like, Bendis is like, hey, this Super Sons book with 10-year-old Damian and Jonathan Kent, it's selling like gangbusters. Bendis is like, I wanna age Jonathan Kent like 20 years. So he's 23 and Damian's still 10. And DC is like, yeah, go for it. Like, just weird decisions like that I think have just been this like just weird domino effect of how everything is just so piecemeal over there now. There's no coherency. Like, there's no like line-wide unity.
Is coherency
with
a word? It sounds like currency.
It does sound like currency,
you can buy
but it is a word.
Well, anyway, like I was saying before you interrupted me, I would probably get rid of guys like Bendis and Snyder and definitely Tom King. And I would bring in guys that are going to tell more simplified stories. And I would really let the artwork shine. I would encourage artists to really push things, break the panels, do page layouts that are really interesting to look at. Be aware of this as a it's illustrations, but it's also there's an element of design behind some of the things that I think has been absolutely lost. Like, one of the things, again, watching the cartoonist Kayfabe, where they talked about the Savage Dragon, was like, Savage Dragon's this big green character. I can't tell you how many times he's against a red background. And it's like, well, of course he's against a red background, because that's going to make him stand out the best. And, you know, you don't realize it. It almost happens like on a subconscious level that it works, but it works. And I feel like modern guys just aren't thinking like that. So, like, I don't know. I definitely have a come to Jesus with my artists, and I would just try to get them to think about these kind of things. And, I'd encourage, let's maybe lay off the photo reference a little bit. You know, like, let's just loosen some things up a little bit. Like McFarlane said, just get in the ballpark, and you can sell it. So,
hey, bud.
Just get in the ballpark.
I think taking from Ian's thought process goes a long way toward making the capes and tights viable, because no one seems to want to put in a long run on a book, because like what's the takeaway after you put in like 100 issues on Superman? It's your name on Superman. Like there's no real viable like takeaway from it. But if you as a writer or artist are getting something from the Superman character, you're not getting Siegel Schuster creative rights, but like there has to be some kind of financial kickback if in a TV show or a cartoon or a movie, like they are adapting parts of the story that you wrote. There has to be some financial kickback to say, hey, we want you to do like a huge thing on Superman. Like, I think there still is value in telling a complicated story, but I think it can be done good. It can be done really well. I don't think it's been done well lately. I think Bendis's whole thing since he started Superman has been like a hodgepodge mess, and like I feel like he's gotten places, and then it's like, what do I do with this?
Yep. Do we think we could attract more top quality artists and writers to miniseries?
Well, that was kind of one of my thoughts, was maybe not miniseries, but let's get all the issue, like let's get a year or something in the can and done, so that way the books can come out on time, but there's not going to be fill-ins because mm-hmm. everything is already going to be done. Plus, that's just better for the reader. I mean, back when we were getting into comics, you could count on these issues being done by the same guys like all the time. And I know that a monthly output for a lot of creators is difficult. So if you're able to get them working way ahead of time, so that way they're not working like just 1 month ahead, then maybe it's doable. Maybe, you know, these top level artists, maybe you could get a cover artist, a J. Scott Campbell or something, if A, you pay him enough. Maybe that's what they got to do. Start paying guys even more money. Because you can't obviously give them creator rights to, you know, characters that have creators that, you know, like characters that already exist.
Yeah.
But if you give them more money, that could supplement the, you know, the fact that they don't own them. But then give them enough time also.
Yeah, and like I'm sure Jim Lee is listening to this right now. Like, you morons, why do you think we don't do this? You have no idea what you're talking about. And I'm sure there are plenty. I'm sure the money just isn't there to be able to, you know, hey, J. Scott Campbell, draw me six full issues.
Yes and no, because another thing is, and DC has even said this recently, they're going to start axing some books, which they should do. I've heard from retailers that there's entirely too many books. People have X amount of dollars for their comic book budget that they're going to spend anyway. So, with so many books, that dollar is stretched so thin, but if you had less books, you could focus on more quality than quantity. People are still going to spend the same amount. So I think if you're paying less creators by producing less books, you can pay less creators more money.
I think at the core of the New 52, DC had it right. There were big name creators. There were only 52 titles. There was a variety of capes and tights, sci-fi, horror, different genres of books being released.
And it felt connected.
And it was 100% all connected. Like, I think at the core of what they were trying to do with the New 52 was, that's absolutely what I would want to do.
I totally agree with that.
I would cut everything down. And, like, I understand you still need to be innovative and you still need to introduce new ideas and new characters. But, like, I keep seeing this fucking character punchline pop up on my fucking Twitter feed. And it's like a fucking Harley Quinn ripoff. And I'm like, why? Why? Just fucking stop. Stop. Just the toy box is fucking full.
Isn't that what they said about Carnage 25 years ago.
I mean, like, I know Carnage is, and Carnage is still around, and I'm sure, you know, Punchline seems to have some traction because I guess she's the more serious, dangerous version of Harley Quinn. She's Joker's henchwoman, but she's, like, I guess she's supposed to be really scary or some shit.
It sounds like garbage.
It does. And I've never read any Punchline books.
We're going to get rid of Punchline. Is that first order of business?
But I think you need to...
Punchline, flatlined.
I think you need to thin the herd. Like, there's so much shit out there right now. Like, everything new Bendis created for the Superman shit, cut it. It's all gone. Rogues are, Red Mist, you're done. John Kent, period. You're out of here. Damian Wayne, you're out of here. Like, there's too much fucking shit. It's too hard to keep track of. Like, comic readers like coherency. They like an interconnected
universe.
That's
that word again.
And they like continuity. And when you start introducing all these different facets, and like it's too unwieldy. It gets too out of control. So bring it all back. Wind it all back.
I've got a great name for what we're going to do. It's going to be called the All New 52.
Ian, I know that the New 52 is, like, by today's standards, a lot of people view it as sort of like this failed experiment or a black mark on DC Comics. It's viewed, like, negatively, which I just simply don't get, because since I was a kid getting comics, comic books have never been more exciting than they were since the New 52. It was absolutely the most exciting thing to happen to comic books since the early 90s. And I just think that it didn't have the proper guidance. And I know that there were a lot of weird early shakeups on some of the creative teams and stuff, but like there were bona fide hits.
Bone.
They could still be going today with some of the creators that were working on some of this stuff. Like, I thought that Zack Snyder's Swamp Thing was great all the way until the last issue.
Scott Snyder.
What did I say?
Zack Snyder. Oh. I was like, holy shit, that...
Scott Snyder, sorry.
I had Swamp Thing mixed with Sucker Punch in my... Like, Swamp Thing in, like, a very skimpy outfit.
Jeff Lemire wrote Animal Man, and God, that was good all the way through. So, like, man, could you imagine if some of these, like... I mean, maybe they would have lost steam over time, but like these guys just stopped.
So maybe this is part of the how you get credit for characters breakdown. If an Animal Man show is
maybe
based
you get
on,
a piece
is based on Grant Morrison's, then Grant Morrison gets that payout. But if you get the Jeff Lemire version, then Jeff Lemire gets that. While whoever created him in the first place,
umbrella credit, like parse that, because a show like Doom Patrol has elements of Grant Morrison, elements of Gerard Way.
I got it. You get a piece of a percentage of the overall sales of the book.
Sounds good to me.
Okay.
I think that's as cut and dry as it can possibly be. I agree with
does
you.
Does anybody do that? I don't think
I
so.
I don't think so.
Why?
That's, I think maybe
Jim Lee, you're welcome.
I think maybe back in the day when the Marvel guys were at their peak, they were getting a percentage of their books. I think. I could be wrong. I don't know.
I don't know either, but it seems like the right way to do it that incentivizes these guys to come with their best ideas, do their absolute best work, hold nothing back, and just make a killing on it. If you're making like royalties on this stuff based on how much it sells, and it's going to also inspire that competition that like those early, when we were into comics, like when we first got into it, those creators had that competition against each other.
Yeah, it doesn't feel like that anymore.
Uh-uh.
And I don't know if it's just because social media and everybody's more connected and everybody's more friendly with each other. It's just a different day and age and a different.
I think it is. I mean,
I relate it to
even
the generations and like how sports are different now. Like,
yeah,
everyone trains together in the off season. Like everyone's buddies. Like it's such a tight community. Like 32 teams is still a tight community. Like no one's really going after anybody.
The way that the NBA sort of has evolved, where today's NBA player likely grew up in AAU camps, which are sort of these all-star leagues that go all through junior high and high school. Those guys all play against each other, mm-hmm. so they know each other or play with each other and know each other. So as they grow and go to college or go to the NBA, they've been familiar with these guys. But back in the 1980s or the 1990s, those dudes didn't have those AAU camps. They just heard about a guy in California, and I'm this dude in Chicago or Baltimore or whatever, and I heard about this dude and saw his newspaper clippings, but I don't know that guy, so fuck that guy. So whenever I meet him in the NBA, fuck that guy. I'm going to beat his team.
Yeah, there's so much more interconnectivity now, and the comics community is much smaller than the NBA community. So, and you know, with, you know, guys being together at conventions and online, like there's just so many more outlets to know these people and understand these people.
So we're going to breed a good, healthy, competitive spirit between our artists. We're going to make them.
Well, yeah, because the better that they do, the more that they make. It's not based on popularity or anything. It's simply based on the output of your book.
Yeah.
Right. So, of course they're going to like want to outdo one another. Mm-hmm. Like that's what it's going to be all about. I think, you know what we should do also? Let's bring back some gimmicks.
You love a gimmick?
I don't know, man. We haven't done much in the way of gimmicks in the last 20 years.
How about those lenticular covers that we were on record as hating a couple of years ago?
Well,
was that
cool.
Was that part of all new DC or
that was
new
part of the new
52?
It was the newest
it was like
of
Villains
the new
Month
DC.
Or whatever. It was there were lenticular and then there were also the 3D ones that I thought they were kind of cool.
I thought we all hated those.
I don't think I did.
Okay, maybe you did. Maybe you're an outcast.
Though. Maybe.
I didn't get any of them, for the record.
I got all of them.
Did you? You mark. So what kind of covers would you like? I know that I liked the, there were some covers that had, I think Shadowhawk had some of the best ones where it had
the embossed foil.
Embossed foil and slashes on the cover.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, yeah.
I'm going with Scratch and Sniff. That's the gimmick that I want to bring back, like the Ren and Stimpy number one.
I had that. You know who wrote that, right?
Was it Joss Whedon?
Dan Slott.
Dan Slott wrote it?
He wrote Ren and Stimpy for probably the whole run, but definitely.
I don't remember
one.
The story. All I remember is the cover had Scratch and Sniff.
I think I have two Ren and Stimpies. I have one still in the bag and one that I scratch and
sniffed it.
So I'm not going to get canceled. I will not say which cover I want to scratch and sniff.
No.
Swamp Thing.
Ian. No. You want to smell
I don't know.
Who has panties in Swamp Thing? Because I know that's what you're getting at.
I believe Abby Arcane has panties in Swamp Thing.
Right.
But I was thinking
panties.
Yeah, I was thinking the floral arrangement of Swamp Thing's body.
His boutique.
So Scratch and Sniff covers, I say scratch and clawed covers, embossed covers, triple gatefold covers, I don't know. We need to step our cover game up as well. Maybe some weird like folding. How about this? This would be cool. It would be very expensive and I'd be immediately fired. But some kind of cover that could open up and you could have it could be like a diorama cover or something like that. You unfold it and it's something that you could display. Maybe something pops out or stands up when you unfold the cover. Very expensive. Like I said, I'm fired, but I think it would be cool.
I think that's fun stuff that we get to down the line. Like, but I think
we gotta
really,
come out the gate before we get fired, Paul.
Really, like just getting the house in order, like paring down stories and characters, getting your basic ducks in a row, getting the right creators and artists, getting people on board, excited about doing it, getting like good people. And if we're doing it, there's certain people that are absolutely going to be left out. But like how do I get you know, like Jeff Lemire to just do Animal Man again? Do Animal Man Part 2 because it was so good. Oh, you know what I'm fucking doing? I'm bringing back iVampire because that book was really fucking good and it didn't get a proper shake.
We have to have a combination of a nice blend of substance, pizzazz, and
wowie zowie.
You know what else I want to do? I want to bring in perhaps a small pocket universe that that continues the Batman 89 trajectory, because I was reading a story recently that referred to the two Tim Burton Batman movies as just like dark fairy tales. And I was like, oh yeah, you know, like certainly in this age of the modern superhero movie, they're nothing like that. They absolutely feel like these darker fairy tales that were kind of like marketed as kids movies, but in many ways they are not. Especially the second Batman with like, there's such an insanely heavy dose of sexual innuendo. The S&M outfit that Catwoman has that is still so hot. I read in the original draft for Batman Returns written by Sam Hamm. Apparently, Catwoman was like just wore like an S&M outfit and wore like just one of those like dominatrix masks. It sounded disturbing.
I mean, potato, potato.
But what I would like to do...
Hot. You know.
Is take that Batman, expand on that, because there's a, even though it says Batman 89, there is a timelessness to that that in many ways will probably age even better than some of the most modern Marvel movies, because it doesn't exactly fit into a specific timeline or place. The city is so
timelessness of how weird it is.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. And what I think you could do then is like expand that to other DC characters and give them that sort of almost dark fairy tale like treatment. And
are we going to pay the big bucks and get Tim Burton to come in and write this book?
Yeah, of course we are, man. I mean, look,
limitless budget.
I'm sorry. Are we trying to fix DC or just keep it afloat?
Yeah. Are we half-assing this, or are we really doing the work?
Do you want a Batman book or do you want a Tim Burton written book?
I said there's a pocket thing. This is going to be a Tim Burton Batman book. Oh, and by the way, Tim Burton, you're also going to tell the Superman story that you wanted to tell. Maybe better than what you originally planned. We're going to make sure
it's not a piece of shit.
It's
not going to be good, but that first issue is going to sell like gangbusters.
We gotta sell.
We're not renumbering comics every 5 minutes. We're gonna maintain numbering.
That we are gonna do that. We're big fans of that.
Right. Like if you want something new, put something new in your book outside of the number on the cover.
That's right. Issue number 622 is gonna be banging.
That's right. Issue number 335.
A really good one. That's almost too much of a normal number. We need some odd shit in there. But those are all really good ideas. I would buy these books in a heartbeat.
I'm
excited for the new DC.
I'm hopeful that DC listens to this podcast right before Fandome, broadcasts it out to the millions of DC fans out there, gets our ideas out to the world. And obviously, you know, leads us to becoming the new publishers at DC and really fixing things.
They've never tried it before. Try publishers.
Matt, speaking of how you want crazy art and dynamism, I think you ought to give Joe Quinones's Dial H for Hero a try, because that art in that book is wild. Not only because he draws in styles from like five different decades, but the way the pages are laid out, it's not just a drawn comic book. It does have design elements. It has big fucking crazy two-page splash page shit. Like, that book is so neat. It's more of a, you know, teen mature story. Like, it's I don't want to say childish, but it's just a fun comic book story, and his art in it is so neat. It's so wild. I would love to see him do 89, because he does such good work. He does such good likenesses, but they don't feel like, oh, I just pulled this from a still of the movie. Like, man, that guy does such good work. I think it would be so neat to just give him the reins of, fuck Tim Burton. I'd just be like, Joe Quinones, go nuts.
Well, as Tri Publishers, we're gonna have to talk about that, but. But yeah, man, it's what you're telling me sounds exciting. I want to check it out now. You're not getting it anymore, I assume.
It was only 12 issues.
12 issues. Okay.
I got everyone.
And all 12. It was a good story.
Yeah, it was a real satisfying ending. There was a lot of heart in it. He draws a good Superman.
It wasn't a story clearly made for TV.
No. It was so weird and comic centric.
Yep. No. I mean, like, in the pace. Like, as we've talked about, comics are, they're made for two things. One is, how do they translate to the TV screen and or movie screen? And two, is it the right amount of pages that fits into a trade paperback?
No, I think it can probably be broken down into, like, 2 6-issue stories.
Okay.
But I don't think there's anything wrong with that. Like, I think if you're looking at, like, the larger, like, runs of Spider-Man and Superman, like, I think you can do 8 issues, 1 issue, 2 issues, 12 issues. Like, you can do whatever you want, but this was always just going to be, like, a mini/maxi. But it's really a love letter to comics and comic storytelling. I wish I could remember the writer, but,
But who cares? We don't care about writers.
Drink those brain cells away.
That's right.
At the new DC.
That's going to do it for us tonight. My name is Paul McGinty.
Ian Sharpley.
You're welcome, Jim Lee.
We'll see you next time. Together.